Read and hear more about important news and policy issues at ncpolicywatch.com. This is News and Views.
Welcome back to News and Views. I'm Rob Schofield. One of the most powerful trends in America over the last half century has been the relentless and systematic privatization of a raft of societal functions and institutions that were once the province of government, from schools to water and sewer systems to trash hauling to prisons and jails. And one of the most eloquent and effective critics of this trend is Donald Cohen, the longtime executive director of the National Research and Advocacy Nonprofit In the Public Interest. And in his new book, The Privatization of Everything, How the Plunder of Public Goods Transformed America and How We Can Fight Back, Cohen chronicles this trend under which so many of our public institutions have been converted into private profit centers, almost always to the detriment of the common good. And recently I caught up with Cohen via Zoom from his home in California.
Donald Cohen, welcome to News and Views. Thank you so much for being with us.
Oh, I'm delighted to be here. I'm a big fan of your work.
Well, it's mutual. I want to talk about the book, of course, but let's start with the organization you've long led and that I've long admired, In the Public Interest. Maybe you could just let our listeners know a little bit about this organization, the work it does, and, you know, its history.
Well, I and a few other folks started it about 12 years ago, I believe, you know, on top of or following, you know, work in this area for a number of years. So I guess just the idea of the organization is, you know, we are what we call a pro-public organization. We believe in public goods and public service and all that, you know, and we oppose private control over public goods, which is, you know, not doesn't mean there's no private involvement, but it means private control over public goods. And there needed to be an organization that helped groups around the country and that worked on these issues and lifted up both the larger ideas as well as the, you know, the specifics of what happens when we privatize important things that we all rely on. You know, we do research, you know, policy work, supporting organizations, you know, we write a lot, and, you know, we're kind of a strategy center on how you lift up ideas of the public and show the difference between public and private and how we need public to lead.
For those interested in checking it out, it's at inthepublicinterest.org. Very simple website to check out. I urge you to do so. I know this issue of privatization and the trends in our nation here in North Carolina, indeed, have been going on for decades. And that's the subject of this new book that you've written with co-author, I believe it's Alan McCallion. It's entitled The Privatization of Everything, How the Plunder of Public Goods Transformed America and How We Can Fight Back. And perhaps you could talk to us about why now, why this book at this moment and some of the key themes that it explores.
Sure. Well, I think why now is because I think what we're seeing, you know, that we're all experiencing is that the concentration of wealth and power in this country and perhaps the globe as well is really at the source of many of our problems. You know, we can't solve climate change. We're thwarted from solving climate change because of the power of the fossil fuel industry. Right. And so, you know, just as an example. So I think that's, you know, clearer than ever right now in American society. Then because of our work over the last 10, 12 years and more, we've seen it happen in bits and pieces as well. A water system gets sold off, and, you know, and it doesn't go so well, and we can talk about that, or a road, or in Chicago, parking meters, or they outsource, you know, a school district outsources the custodial, you know, services, and the jobs go from decent jobs where you can make a, you know, a living to jobs where you can't. Or even our food system, you know, the government doesn't make our food, but they do make sure it's safe. And there's been an increasing sort of chop away of the ability to oversee and to monitor and to regulate those things, you know, both because we don't have the money to do it, tax cuts and all that, but also because the structure of how of our inspection system has actually changed and given some power to food processors. So, you know, seeing, and, you know, I could go on for a long time, but seeing all of those things over the last, you know, number of years, at, you know, at a in detail, you know, on the ground, it was clear that there's a bigger thing going on. There's a bigger issue going on. There's big and bigger dynamic, and it was important to tie those together.
I'm old enough to remember when I was in school. I vividly remember this in high school. We had a debate, and I don't know if it was the national debate topic, or but we debated the topic of whether we should actually take the fossil fuel industry and make it a public utility. There was actually a movement where people seriously discussed that in the later part of the 20th century, that the fossil fuel industry, the oil industry, had become so predatory that it needed to be made into a public utility. And it now seems almost fanciful that we were actually having discussions like that, because the trend seems to, for the last several decades, been going in directly the opposite way. I trust that it's not an accident that that's happened. The people who have helped spur on this trend of taking it in the other direction, I presume this was their plan.
it's not an accident at all. And it comes from a few different places. I think it's important to understand. There is an ideological tradition in the country, conservative, libertarian tradition of true believers that believe that the government should have a limited role in our lives, that it is the market that's the instrument, that the appropriate and correct instrument that can deliver the most for the most. Milton Friedman, he was a true believer.
Right.
He believed that public schools should not be a government service, that you should be able to, shop around for schools like you do for food and shoes. So that's important. Then there's a second group, which is thoroughly important, and that is, corporations who, for better or worse, they're just looking for sales, right? And the federal government pre-COVID was spending, not the federal government, governments in total in the United States pre-COVID were spending $7 trillion a year. Now, if you're the head of a private prison company and there's $100 billion spent every year in corrections, you send your marketers to see if you can sell something. And in fact, one of the founders of CCA said, private prisons, they're just like selling hamburgers. It's just a product.
And maybe for a few $100,000 spent on a lobbyist, you could probably capture part of that market.
Well, lobbyists, campaign contributions. And then in the political and sort of idea belief environment in the country that has been created is, private is better, cheaper, better, faster, more efficient. Government is, filled with lazy bureaucrats who don't do anything. That's the outcome, or that's the result of a consistent attack on government, on the institution of government, and also the idea of government that there are things we have to do together.
You mentioned private water systems. Our environmental reporter actually just reported on a system in northeastern North Carolina that's kind of fallen apart in a subdivision that's run by a private water company. We've had the battle over broadband here in North Carolina. We had a town of Wilson that built their own public broadband system, and the telecom companies went to the legislature and said, ho, don't let this happen in any other cities. We need to make sure that that's the domain of private industry. And then, of course, we've also got school vouchers here in North Carolina, where there's been more and more public funds poured into that. So it seems that that movement is ascendant here, at least for now in our state. I take it this is probably, according to your new book, that's a trend we're seeing in other places as well.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, again, like I said, the telecom companies, their PR people may say they believe in the free market and competition, but they don't want competition. That's logical business behavior. They want full market share. So but let me just say a little hopeful thing about the broadband issue, because it's pretty clear right now that, it's as important as the roads in terms of our infrastructure to make society work. So telecom companies are going around the country passing those laws that would preempt, cities from establishing municipal broadband. But in Colorado, they left a pro-public loophole. I'm not sure why it happened. But they allowed cities, if they wanted to hold a public vote to do public broadband to municipal. Huh. And every city that has done it in Colorado, that has put it on the ballot, it has won overwhelmingly by big margins.
Interesting.
Collins, Loveland, I know there were others as well. I don't remember off the top of my head. So people want good services. It is private interests that are preventing them in many cases from doing it. I'll give you one more example on that. Intuit that owns TurboTax, right? They have basically prevented the federal government from creating their own easy online tax filing. Similarly, in weather, the weather apps on our phone, every piece of data is public data. It comes from the National Weather Service, okay? AccuWeather and other private companies have made it impossible through political influence for the federal government to provide direct apps to consumers, right? So
amazing.
Again, they just want to sell stuff, and they want to stop us from being able to sell stuff, and they wrap it in the ideology.
Efficiency.
And the market, right, exactly.
Coming up next, part two of my chat with Donald Cohen about his book, The Privatization of Everything. Stay with us.
Read and hear more about important news and policy issues at ncpolicywatch.com. This is News and Views.
Welcome back to News and Views. I'm Rob Schofield. In part one of my chat with researcher, advocate, and author Donald Cohen about his new book, The Privatization of Everything, How the Plunder of Public Goods Transformed America and How We Can Fight Back, we discuss some of the history of this trend, how and why a powerful combination of free market true believers and corporations out to enhance their profits succeeded in transforming numerous public functions and institutions that had belonged to the public to, in effect, private property. In part two of our conversation, we discuss some examples of how this process has come to work, the many ways in which the need to maximize profits leads corporations to cut corners when it comes to the quality and quantity of services it provides, and most hopefully how a new movement is taking shape in many parts of the country to push back against this destructive trend.
We're talking with Donald Cohen, who's the executive director of the National Nonprofit Research and Policy Organization In the Public Interest, about the new book that he's co-authored with Alan McHalion. It's entitled The Privatization of Everything, How the Plunder of Public Goods Transformed America and How We Can Fight Back. Another one that example that leaps to my mind that seems to be front and center in recent years is the Postal Service. It seems as if we have someone now who's in charge of the Postal Service, a North Carolinian by the name of Louis DeJoy, who's in the business of running a private company that's competition for the Postal Service. It's not hard to divine what his motivations might be and what he's doing in terms of public investments and preserving the Postal Service.
They want to turn it into a market good rather than a public good so that they can sell and compete and win, right? You know, that's sort of what they want to do. And they want, you know, and it's kind of a problem for the private delivery folks that, you know, we can go to the post office and send something to every part of the country pretty, you know, reasonably cost and pretty much at the same cost, certainly at a letter. So it's kind of, you know, it's kind of a problem for them, because they're in the way of, you know, we're in the way, excuse me, of them making, you know, growing their business.
The excuse that's often given, and I've witnessed this in the North Carolina General Assembly, where lobbyists will go to politicians and say, look, the private sector can do things in a much more efficient way. You know, we'll run things like a business, and therefore it's just going to be a win-win for the public. You turn it over to us to run your, I don't know, your Medicaid system or your healthcare system or whatever, and there'll be all these savings, and it's just a win-win situation. But I take it that's not always the case.
No, it's not the case. So it's real. You mentioned Medicaid, but you know, when we say efficient, we mean we're going to spend less, either in time or money, to do something that we want to do, that we want, you know, we want to get more out of it. So we always ask the first question, okay, what are you going to spend less on? Okay, because in the end, there's not that many things. You could give less service, you could have fewer workers, you could have pay the worker, you know, the employees work, reduce wages and benefits, you can use crappier equipment. It's real stuff you're going to spend less money on. Now, it may be you come up with a new method or a new technology that really does, and cool, we want to do that. That's the part, part of efficiency. So when you privatize something, so Iowa and Kansas as well, Iowa privatized their Medicaid.
Right.
Now, first, when the private company owns it, you have costs that are, you know, that you have a set of costs that you add. Executive compensation of, you know, global corporations in some cases, certainly national corporations, publicly traded. You have profits.
Sure.
And returns to investors. You have lobbying costs, expenditures. You have debt service for mergers and acquisitions. So you have all those expenses that are not going to be spent on the service, period. So that's the first fact, right? It's real money. You got to spend things, but it's not going to the service. The second, so what do they do to cut costs, right? In Iowa, what they did is they gave less care. It's pretty simple. And there's lots of examples of that. And they made it harder for the appeal process was made more difficult. It's simple math.
Right.
If you spend more here, you got to spend less there. And what are you going to spend less on? Given healthcare. And that's exactly what they did.
And yet we seem to keep falling for that. I take it that the new book, which is again entitled The Privatization of Everything, How the Plunder of Public Goods Transformed America and How We Can Fight Back, alludes to the connection to America's systemic racism that has so long and continues to plague our society. There are links between this privatization discussion and that issue as well, right?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, there's a practical and an ideal link. I'll mention both. So the privatization of education, which, you know, really began as a reaction to Brown versus Board of Education. White families didn't want to put their schools with black, you know, their kids in schools with black kids. So the policy response were school vouchers, which, you know,
we have in North Carolina.
North Carolina now. So the policy response then was, and, you know, and then white flight segregation academies got created and schools were closed, black, you know, school, other schools were closed down. They just didn't want to do it. So that's where this all started, because it turned, and sort of the idea there is it turned citizens who, you know, residents who wanted to, you know, who were going to educate their kids in a public system, it turned them into consumers to go shop around for the school that met their needs. Okay. Not anybody else's needs. And there's nothing wrong with that in concept. But when you, you know, but that's the market, and the market segregates and the market stratifies and the market excludes, right? That dynamic is now increasingly part of sort of American services, you know, services and ideas that we're really consumers of public services. We're not citizens, you know, who use public services, but who also have obligations to the whole and responsibilities. You know, in the Clinton administration, you know, he asked Al Gore, the vice president, to do the new National Performance Review, kind of reinventing government stuff. And baked in that language, you know, was privatization of stuff, but it was also a language that we were going to treat citizens as customers. And the impulse was, you know, we need to serve the people better, right? There was, that's part of the impulse. But the downside of that is we're not customers. Now, the stuff has to be good. The services need to be good. And that's our responsibility to do that, you know, to all of our, to make it better. But when we're consumers and not citizens, let me just say it differently. When we're citizens, something doesn't meet our standards, then we're kind of in it together to make it better. When we're consumers, it's just, we're going to make it better for me and my family, and that's it. And so, you know, that's a vestige of racism. And then, you know, the last thing I'll say is, the other thing is when you turn something into a commodity and use commodity pricing, you know, water, we price water as a commodity everywhere with grants and federal grants and others. But the more we go in that direction, which is what privatization helps, the more, again, we stratify and segregate. It's deep.
You're not here arguing for some sort of socialist utopia. The market plays a role in modern American society and can play an important role. Am I right about that? I mean, it's not, that's not what you're arguing.
Absolutely. I think there's, I'd say two things. So one is, it's important to understand that private interests are different from public interests. They're just different. It's, you know, it's an apple and an orange. Okay. Sometimes they conflict, and we need to understand when they conflict, right? But we need them both. So COVID, you know, Trump's first response was give it to the market. Let 1,000 flowers bloom and let the market take care of this. You know, and it was a dismal failure, and states were competing against states to get, you know, their hands on PPE and COVID tests, and you know, there was price gouging going on. Ultimately, they created launched Operation Warp Speed with a lot of government coordination involvement. It actually helped. But Pfizer and Moderna, you know, we needed them to create the drugs. There was public involvement even in that, in the science. That's, so just acknowledge that as well. But we needed them to do that. Where it conflicts is prisons. Prisons, you know, they sell things. That's all they do. They sell heads and beds. Now, private prison contracts, a state contract with the private prison companies, protects their interests because that's what a contract does. They have bed guarantees, keep the beds filled or pay anyway. And, you know, the ones we found were 80, 90, 100, some were 100%. Now, whether that makes sense for the company or not, it doesn't make sense for us. It does two things. It locks us into spending that money. So if occupancy does go down, we could divert some of that money to mental health and community corrections and other things. But it also puts what I call skin in the game. That private prison company, publicly traded, so has an obligation, fiduciary obligation to their shareholders, must be involved in any policy arena that could impact occupancy levels of prisons. And if you look at the, you know, this SEC filings of the private prison corporations, the public companies, they say there's always a section called risk factors. They say that a risk, and it's just an objective risk, of what could hurt their bottom line, reduced crime and reduced sentencing or legalization of marijuana. Those are things that could, it's stated as a fact.
Right.
It's a fact. And so their interests are just different.
it's amoral, not just necessarily. It's just there's no.
Exactly. I mean, that's all they do. They sell things. That's, you know, we buy things. It's cool. It's just not always in our interest.
We're coming to the end of our time with Donald Cohen, who is a co-author of the new book, The Privatization of Everything, How the Plunder of Public Goods Transformed America and How We Can Fight Back. I guess I want to leave us on somewhat of an optimistic note, because there are some parts of your book where you talk about recent successes, and there's a path for, as you say in the title of the book, we can fight back against this. There's a way to push back and maybe reverse or at least slow this trend. Maybe can we end on that note?
First, let me say, it's a long game. This got here in a long time. So we have to be committed to this for a long time, both to, you know, rebuild the ideas of public and then rebuild and reform the institutions so that they, you know, so that they're inclusive and responsive and all that. But there are water systems all across the country that are remunicipalizing. They're realizing, one, is that they actually could save money by bringing it in-house, and then they get control over it. Right. And so, you know, I mentioned the broadband cases in Colorado. People are saying they want it. They're not afraid of, you know, government versus private sector. And then there's lots of examples that are never seen where a major proposal to sell off a water system or privatize something, and it's stopped by citizen engagement. Citizen engagement and the engagement of elected officials who are just asking the hard questions. You know, that's the work that we do. Is we our most important work we do with groups around the country is learn how to ask the hard questions. What are you going to lose if you privatize? What are you going to gain if you privatize? What are you going to gain if you keep it public? Ask the hard questions.
The organization is In the Public Interest. The book is from author Donald Cohen, is The Privatization of Everything. You can find it at, I guess, a lot of different places, but maybe thenewpress.com would be one place to find this book.
The New Press is the publisher, and, you know, they have links to Amazon, but also bookshop.org. And, you know, we encourage people to go to their local independent bookstore and buy it, or call them, or do it at their online shop, because, you know, it's important to preserve and protect independent bookstores around the country.
We urge our listeners to add this to their holiday book list. Donald Cohen, thank you so much for taking the time to be with us. Please keep up the good work, and we'll look forward perhaps to connecting with you sometime in 2022.
You bet. Thanks for having me.
Well, that's it for this edition of News and Views. Remember, you can check us out online and subscribe for free to some of our state's best news coverage and political commentary at ncpolicywatch.com. You can also listen to all of our interviews and commentaries on Apple Podcasts. For producer Clayton Henkel, this is Rob Schofield. Happy holidays. Thanks for joining us. We'll talk to you again next week.
You've been listening to News and Views. A weekly look at state and policy issues is a production of North Carolina Policy Watch. Visit them online at ncpolicywatch.com.